Welcome back, everybody. It's Mark Steiner. Good to have you with us. On our way to this conversation, I want to remind you the Mark Steiner Show is brought to you in part by MeQ, Baltimore's credit union, offering a full range of financial services. MeQ, Baltimore's credit union, is helping its members and its community prosper. When you invest in yourself, MeQ invests in you. More information at www.mecu.com or at steinershow.org is MeQ, Baltimore Credit Union's banner. So we cover the Middle East a great deal in this program and have for a long, long time, and issues facing the Middle East and Near East, the Muslim and Arab world as well. And we've on and off talked to people from different parts of what historically known is Kurdistan, an area made up of Kurdish people. That is in Iraq, it's in Iran, it's in Syria, it's in Turkey. And now we've seen a great deal in the press about the resistance against ISIS that is being fought on the ground in the main part by Kurdish fighters, whether they're in Syria or in Iraq. And the Kurdish world also has a very kind of amazingly interesting political structure that we don't talk about either very much. So we're going to try to get into some of that today with our guests. Sinan Mohammed is here in the studio. Sinan Mohammed is former co-president of the People's Council of Rojava, the main political body working for the liberation of Rojava since the beginning of the civil war in Syria, a liberated area run by the Kurdish people in Syria. She currently serves as the Democratic Self-Rule Administration's European representative and is a member of the Kurdish Supreme Committee in Rojava and works for the Democratic Society Movement. And welcome to the United States here in this program. Good to have you with us.
Thank you.
And in the studio with her is Sarah Hakeamas, who is a PhD student at Johns Hopkins University and is a member of the Rojava Solidarity Group here in Baltimore. And it's Turkish. It's Turkish, correct?
Yeah.
Right, which is important to say, given the conflicts of our world. 410-319-8888 is the number. So welcome. Good to have you both with us.
Thank you so much.
I just very briefly, just to describe, when we hear the word Kurd, when we hear the word Kurdish, the Kurdish people, Kurdistan, give us a quick little history about what we're talking about to give people a sense of who the Kurdish people are.
Yeah. Kurds, actually, they are origin nation in the Middle East, in the Mesopotamia area, in Turkey, Syria, which is now divided, actually, and Iraq, Iran. Kurds, they are the original nation in these places. After the Sykes-Picot agreement, which had happened...
After World War One, when they divided...
Yes,
right.
That time it was divided... So it was divided. The Kurdistan has become amongst four countries, main countries in this area, which is Turkey, Iran, Iraq, and Syria. So according to that, so many families from Syria, when they put the borderline, some of them, the part of the family became related to the Kurdistan of Turkey, and some of them became related to the Kurdistan of Syria. So this borderline, which they put in the line, they separate the families also. So this is what happened. Till now, in Kobani city, they say under the line and up to the line. So they are upper and under the line. So that means under the line of the border, they said. Our family who is under the line of the border, our family who is upper the line of the border. This is what happened. Actually, this Kurdish, during thousands of years, really they suffered a lot in this area. Especially in Syria, we can say during the Baas ruling, 40 years, more than 40 years, they suffered from the Al-Baas ruling by denying their identity. 300,000 people, they have no identity, Syrian identity. They made them and the foreigners. This is what happened. But after the spring, we can say Arab Spring or the uprising of Syria, that time Bashar al-Assad, he wanted to make them just pro him. So he said, okay, I'm going to give the identity for these people. Actually, now for about 100,000 people, they have their identity. But that doesn't mean that the Kurds will be with the pro the Assad, because still they have suffered a lot from that Assad regime. In 1962, there was a system which is Arabatism. They made all the Kurdish area in the Jazeera region, they made it Arabs. That means they removed the Kurdish people who are they own the property, and they move it to another place, and they replace them with the Arab people. Till now, they are there. So this is what happened. And then after that, they have many laws against the Kurds there in the area, because the Kurds in Syria, they placed in the north and northeast of Syria, northwest to the northeast of Syria. All this region, majority are Kurds. In Al Jazeera and Qamishli, most of them are Kurds. In Kobani, we can say all they are Kurds. In Afrin, majority are 90% of the person, 95%, they are Kurds. So in all these places, they have a law that the Kurds who is living there should not own the property there. Even if you have so many properties, lands, or like these houses, you should not be registered on your name. And this is what happened.
So one of the things we see in the news is that it has been the Kurdish fighters, men and women, and that's one of the interesting things about the Kurdish fighting in certain parts of Iraq, but especially in Syria, where so many of the fighters are women and have liberated areas that have been under the control of ISIL, Daesh, ISIS, however people want to call it, and set up a kind of very democratic worker-owned system in the areas they've liberated. Could you talk a bit about that and also the role of women here, which I think has been fairly astounding for most of us?
Now, since the Arab Spring, they call it, which I prefer to say the People of Spring, actually, because who is in these places, they are not only Arabs. In Syria, they are not Arabs. So we have Kurds, Arabs, Assyrian, Turkmen, Armenian, and so on. All these people, they uprised against the dictatorship of the Assad regime. And these people in the area of Rojava, we can call it, they have the Arabs, Kurds, and Assyrian people, Syriac people, all together to come to an agreement so that they can administrate their area together in a democratic system. This is which we make it in 2014, January, declare it the self-democratic administration. That means Kurds, Arabs, Syriac, and Assyrians, Armenian people, they are together. They come to an agreement. They make the social, according to the social contract, which we make it like a constitution in our area. According to it, now they administrate their area together in a very democratic way. And when we need to make democracy, that means we have to change the dictatorship system into a democratic system. And when we say democracy, that means you should not neglect or deny the role of the women there. The women plays a very great role, especially the Kurdish women in the area. Not only in the military system, in the military case. In military, it's okay, it's obvious because of the ISIS. They could defeat ISIS in Kobani. They could defeat ISIS in the other places. They could defeat it in Hasaka and Afrin and in every place in Rojava. Women, they are having the principle that they should protect themselves. And they are able to protect themselves. They are not be waiting for somebody to protect them. And this is what happened in Shangal, in Sinjar, for Yazidis women. If they could protect themselves, that time they can protect and they can defend themselves, will not be in the hand of ISIS.
So the question, I'm curious about, when I look at the role that women played in the Kurdish liberation movement, at different degrees in Iraq, but you see it in the Kurdish political party inside Turkey, where half the representatives in the Turkish parliament who are Kurdish are women. Mm. There are even gay and lesbian men and women inside that coalition. Mm. And you see these Kurdish women fighters who helped liberate Sinjar, just recently in Iraq and now in before that in Syria. So, but we live in a very patriarchal world. I don't care if it's the Arab world, the Kurdish world, or the American world. We live in a very patriarchal world. So where did this power of women come from? I mean, how did it manifest itself? How did it become created? You know what I'm saying? It's not a common thing. I don't care what nation you're in. Having women in this role of power is not a common thing.
Yes, of course, this power, it comes from so many philosophy. It's the first one depend on the philosophy of Mr. Abdullah Öcalan.
Of what?
Mr. Abdullah Öcalan.
Oh,
the leader
of the Kurds, who is now in a Turkish prison.
Right. He has the philosophy of liberating the woman, and it is very important because always all the history you see any revolution happened, it always make the woman neglected.
Right.
Any revolution
right.
in the Middle East happened.
Almost anywhere in the
always,
world.
Always, yeah, in the world, woman is neglected.
Right.
But in this revolution, we say any revolution which is not able to liberate a woman, it is not a real revolution. And any organization which cannot organize a woman, it is not a real organization. So because the society, if you want to have liberated a good society, to have a free society, you have to liberate the woman in the beginning. And depending on these principles, we started to work. And in this way, it is not only the 4 years or 5 years. It is a struggle many years before also, 10 years before the uprising, we struggled there in Syria.
So it has to do with the heart of the political movement of the Kurdish people to be free, the role of liberation of women. That's where it comes from.
Yes, of course. That means the Kurdish, we don't depend only Kurds, because when we talk about the women, we want to liberate the women in all the society, in the Arabic society. Now, Kurdish, they are ahead in this, Kurdish women. Really, they could liberate themselves. They could change the mentality of the society in Rojava. We could build so many organizations for the women. We educate the women from the beginning of this revolution in Rojava. And we built the academies for women so that the women would be aware of their rights in the society. And we start to contact with the other women in the society, like Arab women. Because they are really very, very
oppressed.
So they are not able to be free. We started to contact with them in Rojava, the Arab women there, and now we start to have the councils of women in the Arabic places. Now a council in some Arabic village, now it is the president of it, she is a woman. It has never happened before. So starting now to change step by step the mentality of the society toward liberating the women.
So I'm curious, let me just turn for a minute to Sarah, since you're here in the studio as well, and welcome you here as a member of the Rojava Solidarity Group in Baltimore, and you're Turkish, correct?
Yeah.
And clearly the Turkish government is one of the key oppressors of Kurdish people in the still to this day. So talk about your role here and what this Rojava Solidarity Group is, just for our listeners.
So a group of activists and students in Baltimore, we came together to actually draw public attention to the things happening both in Syria and in the larger part of the region in the Middle East. And especially after the bombings. So we have been following the news happening in Syria and in Rojava particularly, but especially after the bombings happened in Turkey and in Lebanon, we decided to actually find speakers to organize events in Baltimore to talk about the effects of this war, both in Syria and in the rest of the world. And especially because the Turkish state is very complicit in the escalation of violence in Syria, we also want to organize events to draw attention to the things, to the politics of the Turkish state with regard to its support to ISIS, with regard to the hospitals and hospitals and camps they built within Turkey, and the way these things are actually changing the whole region and the way it's actually affecting people's lives.
So before I go to the phones here and get some calls in at 410-319-8888, clearly ISIS is in the news. It's at the top of all the international news now because of what happened in Paris. And we did not say the same thing. Same thing just happened in Lebanon in April when 140 some people were killed in Kenya. I mean, this is all part of the same kind of terrorist attack on the world that's happening. But what do the Kurdish movements have to teach us about this? And what role do the Kurdish movements play in this fight with ISIS? Because it's your people that are on the ground in the middle of it. It's your people whose women have been taken and raped and made sex slaves, and people have been killed, and they just found mass graves in Sinjar of women who were too old, they thought, to be sex slaves, so they were killed in masses of people and buried in the ground. So talk a bit about that.
I mean, when the ISIS captured and they controlled the Sinjar in Iraq, that time really a catastrophe happened for the humanity. We can say it's shame for the humanity in the 21st century that we can see the women be sold in the slave market, sexual market. It is not happened. It happened in the olden days, you know, 1,400 years ago. But now we are witnessing it in the 21st century. And this is what we say. When the women, they know that they've been arrested by ISIS and they taken there to be slaves there, they realize that they have to protect themselves. And they started to also to organize their own groups, military groups. And they are fighting. They were fighting in Sinjar recently. And who they are with the other also groups, the military Kurdish forces in Sinjar, they could liberate Sinjar there. So these things, which they are, when you see the ISIS, they are attacking you, they are killing you, they are beheading the people. That time, you have the very strengths that you have to arrange and to organize yourself so that you can defeat them and fight them. The women in Rojava, in from the beginning, they have this reality. They have that young women. They are young women. They dream of making a house, a home, and family, and to live a very beautiful life. But when they see these barbarian forces, they are attacking us, and they want to destroy every beautiful things. They will not think of it. They will think about how can they defend themselves, defend the society, protect their society, and after that, will lead to live in a very safe and beautiful life. For this reason, now you can see that all the fighter women, really they have these strengths. They are volunteers. They didn't got money. So anyone who is fighting volunteers without getting money, without any benefit at that time, he has a principle of defending and protecting his people only, not only himself, protecting the people. Now in Kobani, they protect themselves and they protect the people of Kobani. For instance, there is an example with a very great woman fighter. Her name is Ari Mirkan. She is a young woman. She could defeat ISIS when facing the tank of ISIS face to face in Kobani city. And when she said ISIS tank is coming towards her groups, she bombed herself in front of the tank and do not allow that tank to come inside the city. And in this way, she could protect her group and the city. Her name is Ari Mirkan. She's a young woman fighter. So how could she get this strong strength to do it? Because she believed that she could do something to protect all her mankind. And for that, I say now, in Kobani, in Rojava, the women there, Kurdish women, they are fighting on behalf of all the women in the world. Look what happened now in Paris. Really, we condemn the attack of Paris there, the Paris attack by ISIS. We condemned it. How many women have been killed there? So the Ari Mirkan, she was fighting on behalf of all these women now. But we need the support for these fighters who are on the ground. They are fighting with very simple weapons, but they have a strong will. They have strong determined to do something, but they need support so that they can protect all the people and defeat ISIS in Rojava.
I'm going to open the phone over for a very quick call before we run out of time and another thought before we have to move to the next segment. But I that's really important to say what you just said, because we hear the American government and other governments arguing about who to support on the ground in Syria, when clearly the brunt of the fighting is being done by Kurdish people, all kinds of Kurdish people, Muslims, Christians, Yazidis.
Not only Kurdish. We have now the Syrian Democratic Forces. They are Kurds. They are Arabs together.
That's an important point.
The Syriac. Yes. So we have Syrian Democratic Forces from Jazeera till Aleppo City. There are Kurds, there are Arabs and Syriac together. They have these forces, and they are now fighting together. And these forces believe in Syria democracy, in Syria pluralistic Syria, in Syria secular Syria. This is what we will believe in. And all this room now, they are fighting together in ISIS.
We've talked a lot on this program about the vacuum that was created by these mostly Western-supported dictatorships, whether it's been Assad or Hussein or whoever it's been, that have wiped out the democratic opposition and left the door open for fundamentalists who want to take us back to the 8th century, mm-hmm. the 9th century. I mean, but we don't know that part of the history that well about people who have that's been completely wiped out. Let me open the phones here. We'll come right back to let you finish some thoughts at 410-319-8888. Ernest, you're on the air.
Good morning to you.
Good morning, Ernest.
Yeah, I want to know if the Kurdish people, are they Sunni or Shiite Muslims? First question.
Okay.
The other question is, the Kurdish people is an ancient empire. How is it that after the Ottoman Empire, that they were cut out of the land? They didn't have any place that they could call their own. They were divided in Turkey, in Syria, and
Iran,
Iraq.
Yeah.
The other thing is, what's confusing is Erdogan, the Turkish people, is bombing the PKK, who is fighting Daesh. Why is the Turkish people attacking the PKK, who was actually on the ground fighting Daesh?
These are great questions, and just for our listeners, PKK is the Kurdish Kurdish resistance army that came out of Turkey that he's referring to, and Daesh is what IS, Islamic State, should be called, which is what they really are called. But people call them Islamic State when they're not an Islamic State; they're Daesh. But the questions he had was: are Kurds Sunni or Shiite?
Most of the majority Sunni. We have Alawis in Kurds and Yazidis. So we have Sunni, Alawis, and Yazidis, the Kurds.
But
most of the Kurds, they don't depend on the religion. They have the interest in their nationalities more than religions.
And so, now, what about the last part of his question? Let's talk there about the Turkish government, rather than attacking Daesh, the Islamic State, are attacking the Kurdish resistance and Kurdish fighters. Talk a little about that.
Actually, Turkey, they are supporting Islamic States. They are supporting ISIS. They were supporting ISIS when the Kobani war. They were supporting ISIS. They were supporting ISIS in Tal Abyad when they were crossing the border from Turkey to Tal Abyad and then to Syria. They were supporting ISIS in many different ways. And our friend, she mentioned that in the hospitals also, when they have got a treatment, in the medical treatment in the hospital of Turkey, they are supporting ISIS. But they are actually now they are bombing the PKK, or the civilian people inside Turkey. The civilian people who are inside Turkey, not they are PKK, they are civilians, they are Kurds. So they are bombing them and bombing the PKK in the Kandil and so many places. So this is the Turkey who is supporting ISIS, but they are bombing the forces who is really defeating ISIS in Shangal.
So before we have to take a break here, which we'll have to do in a couple of minutes, Sarah, did you want to say something? You were about to say something. Please do.
So I think we should have some historical perspective here. After the fall of the Ottoman Empire, the internal colonization of Kurds have started in the hands of these modern nation states. And especially in Turkey, because that's my area of specialization, I have to mention that Kurds' existence has been denied since the 2000s, which means they were not allowed to take any role in governance of their own people. And whenever there occurred an uprising, the Turkish state suppressed this uprising through very heavy weapons and through draconian laws. So the PKK uprising started in 1980. And since 1980, the Turkish state is using this terrorism discourse in order to demonize Kurdish uprising. And because of this history of 30 years long resistance, now Turkey is not able to tolerate the existence of Kurds in Syria, having some power, having control over the region. And that's why the Turkish state is trying really hard to convince the international powers to stand with them in order to fight not only against ISIS, but against the Kurdish resistance movement.
Just as we conclude here, I'm curious. I know you spoke last night, correct?
Yeah.
Yeah, so I'm sorry we couldn't get you on before you spoke to get more people out to hear you. But talk a bit about what you all have been doing now. What is going to happen in Baltimore with your solidarity movement with the Kurds, the Rojava movement?
So I think it's very important to strengthen this movement happening in Syria. And for that reason, we will try to organize some fundraising events. We will try to organize another event on the Syrian war, and we're planning to get people together, leftists, anarchists, students, activists, people from Black Lives Matter movement together to discuss how actually we can have a solidarity among the people and how we can reach out to people in Rojava. So today we were talking about a possibility to have a summer school in Rojava, get people together from Baltimore, from different universities, maybe Morgan State University too, to go to Rojava and to give introductory courses on political theory, on philosophy, on sociology and social sciences, and learn from them how to actually fight against the oppressor of any kind.
So we do have to take a break here, but I do want to thank both of you for coming. This has been a fascinating discussion, and it wasn't until I read the articles the other day that I realized, if I say mispronounce his name, Ocalan?
Ocalan.
Who learned a lot from a man I studied with in the early 70s.
Chin?
Yeah. Who was my teacher. So it was very interesting to read that in the papers. But this is, I want to say that I think that we'd love to hear more about this in the coming months, because I think that Sinan Mohammed, what the Kurdish people are doing in the areas that they have liberated, it should be an inspiration for the entire world in terms of what it means for liberation of women, what it means for workers to actually control their own communities and their businesses, for building a new kind of democracy. We have a lot to learn from the Kurdish people. And I want to thank you so much for being here and thank for the fight you and your brothers and sisters are making.
Thank you so much.
And good to meet you, Sarah. I'm glad you were in the studio as well. And we'll hear more for this as months go on. And maybe we can help encourage people to go to Rajan this summer.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. You're welcome. Thank you.
We have to take a very brief break. When I come back, we're going to be talking with Dana McLean from The Nation magazine about a fascinating, interesting piece she wrote on race and reproductive justice here. And stay with us. Don't go away. We'll be right back.